Today we are talking about the last trend. This year we've been talking about the hierarchy of freedom, and we've been talking about some specific trends and what the impact is on freedom. And today we get to talk a little bit about rhetoric and propaganda. We're going to introduce a line of thinking and share some thoughts with you. Here's the trend. The trend is that those in power, and I'm just going to name some words, some that you may recognize. I mean, it doesn't matter what words you give it. There's the intelligentsia, there's the politicians, there's all these groups called the right, the left, the Democrats, the Republicans, the Tea Party. It doesn't matter what corner it's coming from. All use rhetoric, which is words carrying meaning, to put forth their ideas and get people to follow. And we'd like to start by giving some definitions and some history so that we can understand what rhetoric is and how it impacts us. According to the 1828 Dictionary of Webster, rhetoric is the art of speaking with propriety, elegance, and force. In other words, it's the power of persuasion or action. It can be alluring and charming. Some rhetoric is straightforward and simple, with no double meanings. I had a really, really fun week. This week I picked up, I'm doing TGYC1 with my daughter. We moved, and so my daughter's on a different schedule than our school is up here. And she skipped TGYC1, and so I have to do TGYC1 with her at home. And one of the biographies that she chose to read and have a blue book, exam on was Ronald Reagan, and so that made me have to review Ronald Reagan. And so I've been reading D'Souza's book on Ronald Reagan this week, and so hope you'll excuse my excitement if I use some of the examples from that, because it's been and really fun read for me. So one time when Ronald Reagan was meeting with Gorbachev and they were discussing Afghanistan, and at that time what was happening in the world was more countries were falling under Russia's long communistic arm. And there were countries in South America that were starting to fall under their arm. And, of course, what communistic Russia used was force. And they were now going into Afghanistan and had been. And Ronald Reagan, of course, meeting with Gorbachev and trying to get him not to use force in Afghanistan. And he wasn't making any headway. They were talking and they were talking and they were talking, and finally Ronald Reagan called Mikhail Gorbachev by his American name and said, what you are doing in Afghanistan is burning villages and killing children. It's genocide, and you are the one who has to stop it.
Oh my gosh. How bold.
Yeah. So some rhetoric is just straightforward and simple, no double meanings. It cuts to the chase. It speaks truth and is right to the heart.
And it's powerful.
It's powerful. It completely shocked, Gorbachev, and made him think. And honestly, it paved the way for him not to use force when Poland broke away, and when Czechoslovakia broke away, and when Hungary, when the Iron Wall and the Iron Curtain finally came down, Russia made a choice. They did not use force to stop it.
Well, there were a couple places they wanted to use force, and they sent some tanks, but actually it was a very weak effort.
Yeah, compared to their entire history.
Right.
So, while rhetoric is simply the art of speaking, let's just call it that, it's the art of speaking, we want to find out, A, why it's so powerful, why it can change nations, And B, what's the difference between speaking like the way Reagan did, where it's so straightforward, no double meanings, this is, I'm calling this what it is, and the rhetoric that is propaganda and trickery. And that's where we have to bring in some new definition and new language and ask, what is sophistry? So Nelody's going to give us some history of sophistry. Okay, let me go ahead and share with you some of what she was going to share. There are three kinds of speech. One is, the first kind of speech is the mantic. And this kind of speech is the genuine, authentic, according to Aristotle, it's the real, the prophetic, the inspired.
Sorry, I lost you there for a minute.
Oh, there you go. I'm so glad you're back on. I just started sharing with them the three kinds of speech and just got into semantics. So why don't you go ahead and take over?
Okay. So I don't know how much you covered about why there are three kinds of speeches, but let me just go ahead and give the definitions. So the mantic you covered, it's usually the prophetic, things that have the real coming to the genuine. And in its whole goal, the mantic speak, is the whole goal is to discover truth through spirit or through intuitive knowledge or through prophetic and inspired thought.
I really like how it is that the mantic is the universal intuitive knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, for Reagan to say what you're doing is burning villages and killing children, I mean, that's just...
That was a very mantic phrase, actually, because it was very straightforward, very powerful. Yes.
Yes, and even for him to say the phrase, you know, before he ever started working with Gorbachev for 4 years, before they even came to the table, he called Russia the evil empire. That phrase is rhetorical. It's rhetoric.
And that wasn't very politically correct for him to do that.
It was absolutely not politically correct.
But it was very mantic.
The intelligentsia, people in the world were like, what? How can you call them evil? It's working. It's kind of like the progressives. If it works, it's okay. If it works, it's good. Does that make sense?
Or if it works the way we want it to work.
Then it's good. Right.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't call it evil. It's working. And it's like, it's evil. Everyone's living in slavery. It's wrong. So, we have the mantic. Okay, go ahead and go on.
Okay. Then there's the sophic. And the sophic is the reason and scientific and the experimental proof. And what's interesting is, so the sophic doesn't have to necessarily be true. The sophic, what you do is you take an idea or a thesis and you try to prove it through inductive or deductive reasoning. But it's not, its goal is to come to truth. So over the years, the sophic has presented theories of evolution and the origins of man following natural laws. And the problem is they changed the definition of natural law to be able to define the origin of man through natural law, and that's where they actually... It isn't using sophic anymore. It's using sophistic because they changed the definition of natural law.
And now what it becomes is intellectual conjecturing.
Right.
And they accept that as expert and elite. In order to do intellectual conjecturing, it matters who you are doing the intellectual conjecturing.
Right. So the three are mantic, sophic, and sophistic. And basically, if you change truth, or what we know, the intuitive knowledge of truth, if, let me give you an example. And the only way I can do this is by telling you a story. There was a man, his name was Joe Esterhaus. He is the, I think I've spoken of him before. He is the author of the, of many Hollywood screenplay scripts. And he wrote a screenplay, the screenplay for Jagged Edge, trying to remember all of the different ones, Showgirls. I mean, these are the rated R, should be rated X kind of movies. He wrote really just awful stuff. And his background was he came out of Hungary not a concentration camp, one of those camps that they fled to.
I know that I've only studied a little bit about Joe Esterhaus, and I want to let her be able to finish that story. But meanwhile, let me tell you what happens with these three kinds of speech. Got the mantic, the sophic, and the sophistic. And to give you the definition of sophisticate or sophisticated, it means to adulterate, to corrupt by something spurious or foreign, to pervert. It's not pure. It's not genuine. So we have basically two types of rhetoric. We've got the rhetoric that is...
I'm back.
Your phone is having trouble.
Problems today.
Okay.
Not your phone. Anyway, what I was saying is that it's getting to the intuitive knowledge. This man had lived a terrible, awful life, and he ended up with cancer and had to have throat cancer and had to have surgery. He couldn't remember a day in his life that he didn't have a drink or smoke, and so he had to go cold turkey off of all of that. He had his surgery, and he was he had a tracheostomy. They told him he may not be able to ever eat again in his whole life, and he was just having a breakdown, and he said the only way that he could manage his pain and manage all of the withdrawal that he was going through was to go on these long walks. And he was on this one long walk, and the flies were swarming around his tracheostomy because there was blood in there still. And he just was so miserable, and he was a devout atheist. And in his misery, he fell down to the ground, and he called upon God to save him, and he realized intuitively he knew there was a God that he had been denying all his life. And that's what the mantic is trying to be, is that the mantic is that intuitive knowledge that we all have, that we can spend our lives denying if we want.
And what ends up leading to is there's two camps of rhetoric, two camps of words that are used, and one of them is words that are used through the mantic to express truth and to find meaning. And the other is the sophisticated, which is corrupt. And usually what happens is it's a non-logical, it's a logical fallacy. A really good example of a logical fallacy to me, it's propaganda. When I was in Hungary, I remember walking into what was called, I don't even know if it was called the propaganda room, but I was in the Museum of Terror. I've shared this story before. They took the actual building where the Stalin's leaders in Hungary, after they took over Hungary, they had this building that they lived in that all the prisoners were in, and that they tortured the prisoners. And this is actually turned into a museum now. And the wallpaper of this humongous building, the wallpaper is all the faces of the people who were killed, of the students and the Hungarians who resisted. And so every picture you see is someone who was killed by communism and from Russia. It's a very disturbing museum. And there's different parts in the museum. Some of them are videos of people going through the trials, the illegal trials, and it just various parts. So I came into this one room, and it was so refreshing. It was just so nice to come into a room that wasn't gray and wasn't dark, and it was the primary colors, red, yellow, blue, bright. It was awesome. The furniture in the room was was leather, and I sat down. It wasn't these hard chairs or benches made out of wood. It was just nice, and I sat down. I was like, oh, this is nice. What is this room? And I looked around, and I just got sick, because what it was all of the printed propaganda about how good communism was. And so on the wall, there was this big, huge poster in bright, vivid colors of a really happy family. They were the farmers, a man and his wife and his child, and next to him was this huge, it was like a truckload, but they didn't have trucks. It was just a wagon load of potatoes, overfilling. And then another one was a woman in the kitchen with two huge loaves of bread. And it's just all these pictures. And, of course, I couldn't speak Magyar. I asked my sister what some of them said, what the slogans were. But the bottom line was food for everyone, abundance for everyone, happiness for everyone. And it was what's called sophisticated. It was adulterated. It was perverted. It was the opposite of the truth. The people were starving. They were forced off their farms. They were forced into the mines. They were forced into the city. Their lands were stolen from them. No one had the right to complain or to dissent. That's a really good example of what it means to communicate and what sophisticated means, to corrupt by something spurious. So the point
which
is...
Which then becomes sophistry, and that's where we really want to talk about today is sophistry.
Right, because we need to be able to recognize both types of rhetoric, sophistry and mantic.
Right.
The words we
and
use...
And when it's sophistic, we need to be able to see the scientific and the reason. In fact, the founders were genius at that, taking intuitive knowledge and applying it in a scientific way.
Right.
And reasoning through it. I mean, that's what Aristotle did so well.
And here's why it's so important. Rhetoric, or the words we use, is meant to define meaning. It's meant to define meaning and create an order or a way. That's why the words are so important. Man searches for meaning and order. Melanie, why don't you tell us about what Socrates and Russell Kirk say about order and meaning?
Okay. So Russell Kirk, in his book, Roots of American Order, basically says that before a person can live tolerably with himself, he has to find some kind of order or some kind of meaning. when we lack order in the soul and order in society, we dwell in a land of darkness, as darkness itself. And he quotes Job saying, "And of the shadow of death without any order, and where light is as darkness." He tells a story about this woman. Her name is Simone Weil. She was French, and she spent her whole life looking for meaning. She was at one point Jewish, then she went to Christianity, and she was just looking for this meaning that she needed in her life. And she never found it. And she wrote this. She said, right before she died, he says, "Simone Weil wrote, this is a time of disorder, very like the disorder of Greece in the 5th century before Christ. In her words, she says, it is as though we had returned to the days of Protagoras and the Sophists, the age when the art of persuasion, whose modern equivalent is advertising slogans, publicity, propaganda meetings, the press, the cinema, and the radio, they are taking place of thought, and controlled the fate of cities and accomplished coup d'etats. So the ninth book of Plato's Republic reads like a description of contemporary events. And
wow. And, well, you have to understand, she lived during World War II in France. Isn't that right?
Yes.
1943 was when she died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just need to add something to what you're saying when you're done. You just made me think of something.
So even Socrates himself, before he died, and of course he was forced to commit suicide. For those of you who don't know that story, it's fascinating because he got in trouble because he would not preach, he would not teach his students that about the gods, and he said he refused to teach them myths, and that he believed that there was one God who loved all man, but he didn't know him. And before he died, he said, he emphasized two points. He said he was able to give a last speech, and he emphasized these two points. One, that he had not found what he was looking for his whole life and knew of no one who had. And two, that failure had not in the least abated his conviction that what he was looking for could be found.
Wow.
We are looking for meaning in our lives.
Yeah.
And because it's such a basic instinctual need, we want to find it. And people in the world understand that the human race is looking for meaning. And so that's when they
and
can
so
take advantage.
That's why rhetoric can be so powerful, one
yes.
way or the other, because the words actually define the meaning. I just read my daughter's Blue Book exam from TGYC1. She did one on, it was on World War II era. She read the biography of Enzio Boucher and some other, like three or four other books in the era.
You're talking about TGYC2, actually.
Well, what happened
TGYC
is
TGYC one, they read
read documents.
They read the documents.
And then they do
anyway.
The biographies on them. Anyway, she was writing this, and one of the things that I can believe this of our students, that they can see this. Hitler, some of his rhetoric that he used, and the people of Germany, this is why he was so powerful, is because they were like without a country. They weren't unified. They had been demoralized. They had lost World War One. They had been demilitarized. And he comes along. He unifies them. He uses the word unification. He uses the word family. He uses the word integrity, loyalty, sacrifice. Says to them, all of the good people of all the other nations are really hoping we win. Right? They really believe in our cause of family and truth and justice. He uses all of these important words, right? And
yeah.
One of the saddest things that happened when they found out that they were the barbarians is now they turned cynical.
Yeah.
There's the terrible tragedy of all
they
of the deaths
duped.
That happened in the concentration camps. But what's not talked about is the death of the soul of the German when they turned cynic and cynical.
Which
and
was almost the most tragic of all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and so because now those words, meaning and order, I mean, it's kind of like the girl that you were talking about of Simone. She was cynical. That's a sad death.
Yeah.
Cynicism is a very sad death. So just like Frankl and Maslow talk about the hierarchy of needs or that everyone is looking for meaning, that's why it's so important too. That's why the words can have such power.
That's absolutely right. And the German people, they were looking for meaning. And so when Hitler was saying to them, yes, we need to take a tenth part of what we use for food, and we need to give it once a month to the poor, and that sounds like a really good thing.
Yeah.
No, he called that their social contribution. That sounds like a really good thing. Let's get rid of all the things that are holding our society back. So let's get rid of homosexuality, and let's get rid of prostitution, and let's clean up our streets. And those all sound like really good things. Well, I mean, yeah, but how do you get rid of prostitution? Well, you kill prostitutes. Well, how do you get rid of homosexuality? Or how do you educate people to help them understand their lifestyles or their bodies? Well, you just kill them. No.
That's what's so interesting. I'm going to jump down to the bottom here because we've listed about 7 questions that are important to ask. But then we're going to go, here's what it is. You have to ask, what is being said? What are the words being used? Those words were all great. What are words that are being used now? And Melody's just thrown out a few buzzwords. I'm going to tell them one, and then Melody tell them another. One of the words being used now is social justice. What's another word, Melody?
Which means steal from the rich, give to the poor. consensus of values. Huge, huge among educators.
That's a huge buzzword, consensus of values. Just think in your mind what you think it might mean. Okay, so what is being said? Those are some words. Equality, democracy. These are words that are being said. Then
and
you have
and
to
have
ask.
The meanings change. That's the big question. Just like the Sophix had come up with an idea that man evolved from something, they had to change the meaning of the phrase natural law. So it no longer meant God's law. Now it means physical law.
Because that's what you ask. You say, what is being said? And you say, what is meant by what is being said? Then you have to ask, what is not said? This is how we have to think when anything is presented to us. What is being said? What is meant by what is said? What is not said? What is inferred? And now here's the big key. If we can see this, then it will unravel everything. What is being done under the name of what is being said? For instance, there was one time a Jewish synagogue that was burnt in Russia. And it was the Nazis themselves who burnt it, but it was the Nazis themselves who saved the fire. And what was being said was, who are those rascals who burnt this? And we better enforce the curfew, right? But what was being done under what was being said, what was really being done was the atrocities of the Nazis. And then there's that you ask, what are the results of what was said? That's different than the results of what is being done. Those are two different results. That's what we have to ask. What are the results of what is said? What are the results of what is being done? While there's rhetoric, so we have the two types of rhetoric. We've got the mantic rhetoric and we've got the sophisticated rhetoric. The rhetoric that is laden with sophistry, the logical fallacy and the double meanings.
Let me just clarify something really quickly. So we have the mantic and we have the sophic, and then we have sophisticated or the sophistry. So what the sophistry is going to do to get to you is use the mantic or the sophic, whichever one will speak to you, and manipulate it so that they give new meanings to things, and they leave behind the intuitive truth.
Right. There's a few things that happen that propaganda does, or that this kind of rhetoric does. It can muster belief. While saying one thing while doing another. That's the example we just gave of Hitler. He mustered belief in family, integrity, honesty, sacrifice, God, morality, In the end, when his people felt duped, they also left behind the real meaning of those words. And they were cynical. So,
you're saying that one of the things that rhetoric does is muster your belief.
Yeah.
And they will
rhetoric
they will
musters
use,
belief.
They will use whatever language you speak to muster that belief.
Right.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
It can.
So if your language is family, they could use that?
Yes. At the same time, they could do another thing. They could change the language and make family not be good. They can do either one. Sometimes they can actually use your own language. Sometimes they use language to change what is good. So either way, one of the things that I'm going to call it sophisticated rhetoric does is it musters belief saying one thing while doing another. Let's just put it that way. That's one of the things that it can do. In this case, using the good words or what people would consider good and doing something completely different.
That's very confusing.
I know. I know it is. That's the whole point. Here's the next thing that it does.
It scares me. It's very confusing.
Here's the next thing that sophisticated rhetoric can do. It can change the focus.
Hey, can I ask you a question, something really quick?
Yes.
I need to ask you this question. Were there? I'm just thinking of Nazi Germany, and I'm thinking about the people who were in Nazi Germany at the time that all this was happening, where they were using all these words and doing, you know, to muster the support of the people. Were there people who could see through it?
Yeah, and they were rounded up and killed.
Or they left, right?
Right. Right. Or they created a secret resistance. I mean, there were lots of options, but there are some who can see through it, and in something as powerful as a despotic government and a tyranny, sometimes it doesn't matter because they're rounded up. And that's what's so terrible about that form of government, is sometimes they don't win, even if they can see through it. Really, when Reagan called it the evil empire, he meant it because the people were not free. They weren't free to see through it. They were killed. It's interesting. The thing is muster belief while saying one thing and doing another. That's one thing. But another thing is they can muster belief in something not good, like Mao in the Cultural Revolution. He mustered belief in the four olds. He changed the rules of the game. So he taught the people, these four olds are bad. Anything, if people own their own property, they're bad. If you have any people in your history that own their own property, your family is bad. Anything that had to do with capitalism, that had to do with democracy, that had to do with freedom, he called bad. These are the four olds. He completely called what was good bad and bad good. It was very different than what Hitler did. Hitler called good good, got everybody to muster their belief behind that which was good, and then did bad things. Okay? So that's why you have to look at what's said and what's done. You can't separate the two. You have to look at both.
It just seems overwhelming to me.
And then you've got Mao, who he took the four olds and called them bad. Anything from the Western culture, anything from America, anything that had to do with capitalism, the free market, democracy, anything that had to do with that was bad. Family was bad. Allegiance to family was bad. You had to have your allegiance to the state.
Property ownership was bad.
Property ownership was bad. So those are the two of the things that sophisticated rhetoric can do. It can muster belief in something that isn't good, right? And has bad results, or it can use words and have you that are good while they are doing something bad. Is it okay to be actually have good and bad. I mean, are we even allowed to talk about good and evil anymore? Okay, here's the next thing.
Yeah, no kidding. We're not allowed to do that anymore, right?
I know. You can't call something
evil anymore.
It's not
politically correct.
It's not. But I love it. Let's not be politically correct. Here's the next thing that sophisticated rhetoric does. Changes the focus through diversion and distraction. It's kind of what you told me, Melody. It was Newton said 50% of the problem is naming the problem.
Lavoisier
says 90%.
Okay. Yes, that's
yeah.
Right.
So you have these two incredible scientists, and they know that the big deal is to actually name the problem correctly. Well, on purpose sometimes, those in power change the focus through diversion and distraction, and they don't name the problem correctly because it can do a few different things.
Or they do name the problem correctly. They say, oh, there's too much capitalism in China. We want communism. That's a problem. How do we – do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they give it a name.
You mean that to them they want more communism. So they say
right.
The problem is capitalism. We want communism.
Right.
Here's the funny thing is not naming the real problem in the first place, what happens is then special interest groups get attention and funding. That's one of the things that can happen.
And you know what? Oh, my gosh, I'm having this huge epiphany. That's the problem with our education system. Everyone keeps saying there's not enough accountability. Everyone keeps saying the problem is our test scores aren't high enough. They're saying that's the problem. That's not the problem.
The problem is the teachers aren't free to teach.
The culture we've created for youth is really messed up, you know? And nobody will look at that. No, everyone's afraid to say, well, how do you change the culture? You can't take away their movies. You can't take away their iPods. You can't take away their, you can't take away their pornography. You can't take away...
You can't
force people to have families. You can't change their culture. Their culture is what it is.
Well.
And that's the problem with education.
I was watching Freakonomics, and one of the things that they tried, the economists, the economic experts were doing an experiment to see if they paid the kids $50 a month if they could keep above a C, if it would work. And what percentage across the board would it work just to pay them? It was hilarious. I'm thinking, these guys are expert economists, and I actually like them. But they missed a really big point. They actually thought money could buy grades rather than culture. Rather than, the skater kid, his grades went down. He was like, not going to be bought. I'm like, hello? There's something that matters a lot more to this kid than money, and it's his identity. Identity is what motivates. And he said, I will always be the class clown, and I want to be the class clown.
Yes, it's the culture we've created for him.
It's the culture. Yeah. It's his culture. If you want to get economy, anyway, it's very interesting. Now,
well, I
there's
mean,
something
not else. That, you know, this is the thing. Now that we've created this grand educational experience that Dewey suggested that we do, that everything become a democratic experiment, and that we put children in school according to grades, which, in my opinion, created the culture in the first place. Not that we did what Dewey wanted us to do with that environment, but we created that environment. That was the big mistake right there. If we change that...
Well, it's interesting because what are we doing with Commonwealth? We're creating a whole different expectation, a whole different vision, a whole different culture. The families coming together, they play differently.
Yeah, and you know, 12-year-olds taking classes with 15-year-olds, no problem. You know, they're not class separated. I will tell you, I wished I had Brenda on, but she said that she had a very interesting experience this last week where there was this woman in the Boulder area. She's in Colorado. And she called her, and they had a little discussion. And the lady says, "You know, I'm not really happy with what I'm doing with my children right now. They're they have a couple of options in Colorado for homeschooling, and they were engaging in those options." And she says, "But you know, it's really not working for us." And she says, "So next year, I'm thinking about doing a Commonwealth." And so Brenda said, "Can I ask you a question?" She says, "What?" She says, "Why are you waiting till next year to change the culture?" And she says, "Well, you know, these are all the reasons why." But then later, this woman called Brenda back and said, "Thank you so much for asking me that question. I went out with my other friend who's been going down to your Commonwealth, who lives in this area. And we went out, we had a discussion, we talked about this, and I'm starting to realize I need to know what it is that you guys do." So her and this friend from Boulder, they came down to their Commonwealth the next week to observe. And this woman was so excited about the culture that was created there and the atmosphere and the environment. She went home and told all of her friends, "We have to start a Commonwealth. We have to do this because it's the right culture for our children, because it's the correct balance between friends and family. And it's the right place for them to get the environment of scholar faith."
It's truly unbelievable what's happening. It amazes me when I see, you know, 10 years ago when Anelity and I had a vision, we knew we wanted to create culture for scholar faith. We knew the culture mattered. Never in our hopes and dreams did we think that it would be this catch fire. And we thought it, at, you know, we knew we had the call, but we really thought, can we really spread it beyond our own community? Is it actually possible? If we're not there, you know, in our own community, working with families one-on-one, blah, 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 can we actually really hope to impact American culture and school culture and family culture and the environment? It's a big job that each of you are doing. That's what we're saying.
Oh, I'm telling you what, you guys are changing the world.
Yeah.
By what you're doing in your little communities.
Because that's right.
You're actually addressing the real problem, and you're not listening to the rhetoric of education.
It's pretty fun. It's amazing because, you know, Anelity, I don't know if you find this, and all of you who are listening, if you have this, but our children have various, I don't know if I would call the other ones community, but associations. In other words, we have the Commonwealth associations. You know, my son, he brings three or four friends home every Friday after Commonwealth, and I watch these kids, and they're downstairs on the wrestling mats wrestling. They're outside in the tree swings, swinging like Tarzan. They're inside on we have like a pogo stick and a unicycle. And these boys are teenagers and they are having fun. And yet my daughter, she'll go to the other association which is church, and she comes home and she, you know, we just moved here. She's just making friends and she's just saddened. It's hard for her to connect with the girls who are talking about swapping school, and their mom wants them to bring their grade up from an F to a C. And they've got, you know, boyfriends and relationships that a 14-year-old, at least Laura, you know, in our culture, it's not time for that. And she's put in this environment with people who supposedly will have a shared culture and a shared everything. And finally, I'm like, you know what, Laura, you got to bring them into our world. You got to step up and be a leader. What can you do with them in our home so they'd be comfortable talking about and doing the kinds of things that are part of our culture? That's a big thing for a teenager to do.
Yeah, it is. That's real statesmanship right there.
Yeah. invite them over here and think of I said to her, you know, it's so fun. She's gone to tea with her uncles at the Grand Hotel in Salt Lake, and that is quite an experience. That's really fun. And I said, we could create a tea party. She's like, Mom, they are not ready for that. I'm like, you know, you're probably right. You could just start by getting in the hot tub and making cookies together. You know, don't try and do a tea party. But this is about language. This is, I just want to say one more thing with this. I'm not trying to be off on a tangent.
We are a little tangential, but, you know, I had that epiphany, so.
I was with a group of 40 ladies the other day, and the person who was leading the group said, I want to know what your greatest fear is for your teenagers. Split the group into three groups, those who had already raised their teenagers, those who had teenagers, and those who had little kids. And all the ones who had little kids who weren't teenagers, they got to share what their greatest fear was about teenagers. I'm thinking, and
I don't have any fears.
Teenagers. God, are you afraid of them? Heck no! Oh my gosh, but the fears that were coming out. They were afraid.
Fears.
And their biggest fears, all of them were along the same lines, even though they didn't use these words, was basically the fact that they knew, and they couldn't articulate it like this, but it was all the same fear. They knew that the friends would, what the friends did in high school were going to way, way, way outweigh anything that would happen in the home. And they knew what was in the high school. Drugs, illicit sex, not caring about the grades, blah, blah, blah. They talked about all of these things, and that was their greatest fear. It's amazing.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was back to the whole, what's wrong with education is not our test scores and not our, you know, that's their rhetoric. We don't buy into their rhetoric. We just go to the real truth. We cut it to the chase, and we say, it's a cultural problem, and guess what? We're going to create a family culture and solve this problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, here's the next thing that sophisticated rhetoric can do. It can use excuses to get people to settle because there's no alternative. I'm going to give an example of this, but I'm going to say it one more time. It can use excuses to get people to settle because there's no alternative. This is what Carter did when he was president. He said that Americans would have to learn to live with less. It was the new era would be an era of limits. This is his rhetoric.
I think that's really interesting because wasn't it FDR who said, what were the freedoms? Freedom from sickness, freedom from want. That's what it was. He said freedom from want. That was really different from what Carter said.
Right, and there's something called the misery index. And the misery index under Carter rose from 13% to 20%.
Oh, my gosh, because of his, oh, my gosh, oh,
yes.
My gosh. It's so interesting
yes,
how people are influenced.
It's people, he defined meaning in their life, and the meaning in their life at that time was that this was an era of limits, and we would have to learn to live with less. You know, Reagan came in on his heels, and the misery index dropped by half. Half. Because
yeah, even the way we speak is rhetoric or can be sophistry. The way that, you know, if you have a friend, you know, in our family, we measure relationships by minus and plus. So if my daughter has a friend who's taking a lot of her energy, we'll say, so is this a minus or a plus, you know? And what I realize is the people who are minuses use language very negatively, like, oh, we're just going to have to learn to live on less. You know, that Eeyore attitude.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, through all of this, I'd like to open up for question and answers a little bit, and Melody, would you? I mean, we're not going through the five levels of freedom. We want each of you to think about that on your own. What is you know, specific kinds of rhetoric. What is the impact on self? Those are the questions you have to ask. What's the impact on the family? What's the impact on government policy? That's what we have to ask.
So can I make one? Can I make one more point?
Yes.
I think is I'd like to just bring it back to the whole mantic, sophic, and sophistic, which was sophistry. So in TJ Ed, I think it's interesting that people are very, the people I know in TJ Ed are very, very all about the mantic, which is very important. And if they don't do a scholar phase well, they miss the sophic. And unfortunately, the sophic really is an important part of their education, because this learning to think like a sophic, like Aristotle does, having lines of logic and showing proofs and repeatable experiments and things like that. If they don't start, which is what TJYC and Pyramid Project are trying to help them do, by the way, if they don't go there, if they're unwilling to go there, they will never be able to see the sophistry.
Right. Right. Right.
Because they won't know the truth. They'll be duped. And I'll tell you, since in the last 10 years, since I've really started to, and it's taken me literally 10 years to start seeing like that. And reading, the two people that's helped me the most is C.S. Lewis and Aristotle, to start thinking in those ways. It's so interesting to me how much my thinking has changed. You know, I read 15 Federalist Papers yesterday, no problem. None.
Right, and 10 years ago you couldn't have done that.
No, not even close. Because the Federalist Papers is sophic, which I'm so excited about, which I love so much. What I realize is those people, those men believed that the average person could think that way and did think that way.
Yeah.
And they didn't use sophistry to get what they needed. They used the sophic. They used proofs. They used real logic, not logical fallacy.
Wow.
And to implore the people, to implore our American people, to beg them to see how important a union would be and how much better a union would be. They didn't go out and use propaganda or any kind of sophistry to get what they wanted. They went to the truth.
And then they reasoned.
And then they reasoned. Yeah, I like how it says in the New Testament, let us reason one with another.
Okay, Kathy Malore has her hand raised. Kathy, I'm unmuting you now.
Hey, that was frustrating.
Hi, I've unmuted
you. Permanently muted.
Well, I'm glad she gave you that line, Kathy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I actually did have my hand raised from earlier, and it's kind of all tying together with what you talked about, actually. When you were talking about the TJ Ed Forum, I just wanted to make the comment that you didn't mention that you're speaking on the Student Whisperer and that everybody should go to that session. It's the Friday evening session. I'm very much looking forward to it. I think a lot of times we see the title of that session. I think it's Leadership Summit, and it sounds like it's for somebody else. Like it's somebody who's really doing something that makes a difference, you know? And like you guys were talking, our Commonwealth schools are changing the world. I mean, they totally make a huge difference in the lives of the families that join them. And I think we can all consider ourselves leaders. And I just wanted to highly recommend that everybody go to that session. And you get a copy of the Student Whisperer if you go. So I'm excited about that, too.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
It's always one of my favorite sessions there at the forum. And Melody and I always really enjoy going to the Leadership Summit because one of the biggest things they do there is called networking in the round, and we get to network with each other.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But see, everybody's thinking that it's for somebody else, that it's for those people that lead. But we all, you know.
All of us.
It's rhetoric, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so true,
Kathy. To see ourselves as leaders in our own community and somebody who needs to network with other people who are trying to do what we're doing and to be really successful at that, you know? Because the more people...
Can you imagine if all 72 Commonwealth schools had people there?
Oh, wow. That would be amazing.
It would be fabulous. It would be really, really
so
powerful.
Fun.
And also just on that party, that youth party, it's actually today and it's online. Anybody has scholars going to the forum? I'm trying to get them to connect with each other before they get there so they don't, I mean, like my daughter's going knowing almost nobody, but, you know, online connection, first step, then they can meet each other when they get there and it won't be so much like, wow, I'm from out of state or I don't know anybody here.
Okay,
so that, if anybody,
I'm glad you're explaining that.
Anybody has youth that are going to the forum, and you didn't get that email, just email me and I can send you the link.
Okay,
awesome.
Perfect.
Thank you, Kathy.
And I remember there was one year that anybody from Lemmy, I really like to connect with you. I don't have a big room this year. We probably wouldn't all fit in my room, but I really loved it the year that I had a big room and we all got to see each other and talk.
That year only changed my life forever.
It did.
Really?
It did.
Maybe
totally
I should call it.
Going to Tiffany's gathering.
You know, maybe I'll call in the Saturday night. What night did we do it? Friday night or Saturday? Well, lots of people.
Oh, we did it Friday because. Oh, maybe no. I think it was Saturday between the forum and the ball.
Yeah,
because if I can upgrade the room, we can do that again, and anyone from any of the Commonwealth schools can come up and we can meet. Let's do that again. That was so fun.
You changed my life.
Okay, come by the Lemmy booth and find out what room number I have, and we'll all meet in between those times, because the connection we have together is so important.
Oh, yeah.
Hello. Hi, this is Rocio.
Okay.
I unmuted myself. I used those numbers that you sent to
good job.
I raised my hands various times.
Yeah, it's not the raised hand thing isn't
working
on the computer right now.
It's not working. Just wanted to let you know that. I did have questions about the call, the subject of the call too. I was a little confused. Thanks. You mentioned three kinds of speech. Is it semantic or demantic? D or S?
Mantic. Mantic. M-A-N-T-I-C.
Okay. That's the first one. Then the second one is, because then I have sophic and I have mantic. So I'm trying to figure out what the three kinds of speech, what they're called. And then
mantic
I have sophistic.
Okay, mantic, sophic, and sophic, sophistic.
Oh, okay, sophistic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll
mantic,
have to go back,
sophic, and sophistic.
I think when we lost you, I think at the beginning we had a different name. I thought it was either semantic or demantic. I wasn't sure.
Sorry about that.
Know. I also have an interesting question. You're talking about the tea party. Are you referring to a tea party or the tea party?
I just am saying anybody in power is going to use rhetoric.
No,
and
were you
so
talking,
I was
about when,
talking
about, were you talking about when Lara went to a tea party?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh,
Was it a tea party, or are you referring to the tea party?
No, and sorry. At that point in the conference call, I said my daughter could have a tea party.
Okay.
And actually,
because I was like, oh my gosh, that's scary. Okay, great. Trumpet. Thank you so much. So, how do I unmute myself now?
I have no idea.
You probably can't. Just don't let us hear your background.
You can use your mute on your own phone.
Obviously quiet because that's been on for quite a while, and it's okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is there? We probably have time for one more person. Yeah, it's not. It's not working right now. Kathy, did you have anything to say about the call? Thank you for clarifying those two other things.
No, I loved what you guys had to say about it because we really do need to get better at understanding what's being, you know, said out there, but I also feel like we need to get better at utilizing those, not that we want to be a sophist, of course, but utilizing rhetoric to become powerful communicators.
Well, I mean, I think that Reagan used language, rhetoric, you know.
Absolutely.
He just used it plainly. He didn't use it in a sophisticated way so that it meant what it didn't mean what it, he was saying. Yeah, we need to use powerful language. And, I mean, really, pretty much, Kathy, that's what you do.
Yeah,
is teach
exactly.
kids how to do that and adults.
Well,
so
and grateful
you,
that you do that.
If you just, like, consider rhetoric and its negative connotation, then you've lost the tool, you know, you've lost this major tool of communication because, of course,
absolutely.
Rhetoric is used for evil, but we want to be able to, you know, figure out what makes it happen.
I'm really glad you brought that up because if anybody wants to study rhetoric in both its facets, I would suggest reading D'Souza's book on Ronald Reagan. Because he shows the rhetoric of all the groups, including Ronald Reagan. And it's a fascinating understanding to see how important rhetoric is in the use of persuasion through words.
Yeah.
And yet, you've got those three levels.
And honestly, Kathy, what I was thinking is rhetoric, the word rhetoric actually has gotten a bad meaning. Because you'll just say, oh, that's just rhetoric. No, what it's not is, what it really is just sophistry.
Yep.
And we need to change our word. Oh, that's just rhetoric. I don't want to hear that. No, we need to change that to, oh, that's sophistry. But rhetoric is powerful language, powerful speaking.
Yep, or writing.
Yes.
And lo and behold, when you get good at one, you get good at the other.
Which is what
a
writing
cycle.
You know, and Elodie, why don't you give that guest speaker number in case there's someone else who'd like to comment? Give it one more time.
88*23867.
I'm Nancy.
Okay, go ahead, Nancy.
At the very beginning, you talked about the trend that all of this goes under. You were saying that those in power, and I think it was during when we were losing Anality, that you didn't finish what that actual trend was that all this is
based
on.
Well, what the trend is that those in power will use rhetoric to persuade the people.
We had to explain the call in order for you to understand that some of it is sophistry and some of it isn't.
Right.
Okay.
And we have to be able to determine between sophistry and just powerful speaking. You know, I don't know if any of you are Glenn Beck listeners, but I feel like he is trying to identify sophistry, and he's just using powerful speaking to do it, which is rhetoric.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good question. Good question.
Thank you.
We had someone else also. Uh-huh.
My name's Camille.
Hi, Camille.
And I just wanted to, when you talked about your daughter and the situation that she's in with having to be this leader in her little cultural group, the same thing happened to my daughter. We moved recently, and I live within 2 miles of the Mexican border.
Oh, wow.
And we moved from, like, where the church culture and homeschool culture was really, really strong. And she left all of that and came to where she was having similar circumstances that your daughter was, where everybody, all the 14-year-old girls were talking about their boyfriends and their grades, and she was having a really hard time relating. And I did the same thing with her that you're doing with your daughter, saying, well, you're here for a reason, you know, see what you can do with these girls to help them instead of just being sad about the fact that you don't with your other friends. And my daughter has gone from a timid person who relied heavily on her friends to help her with her identity, and luckily she chose good friends, but she has changed into this role it was this opportunity that hopefully all of us get at some point in our lives, no matter what culture we're living in. But she just took it on and has made a huge difference, not only in her own self, but has had an impact on everybody she touches. People come to her now in her youth group that won't go to an adult. And one of the boys has termed her the youth therapist because they go to her and they talk to her about their problems, and it's a weight. It's a weight that she carries, but it's a weight that is a plus. Like Nelody was talking about, is this friendship a plus? Yeah. And I've just been like, how scary it was to move her away from this, you know, amazing, wonderful place, you know, where I knew she would get everything that she needed. No, I was very wrong. It's here that she's getting everything that she needs, because it's here that she's been given the opportunity to stand up for everything that she knows is right, and it's solidified it in her. She now knows who she is because she's separated from everybody she thought she was wanting, you know, to be like, and has found her own identity and changed the face of her culture for the rest of this group. It really is absolutely amazing that change that she has brought on these other youth people. I would not have imagined.
Her world.
Yeah, it has been completely, they don't talk about boys anymore around her. Yeah, she's really stepped up to it, and I just feel like, holy cow, whatever we can do to give our kids this kind of opportunity is absolutely worth it, even if it means to live, you know, within 2 miles of the border.
Wow.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing.
Do you know, it reminds me of a story of a young man who lived in our area one time, and he was not doing very well here, kind of hanging out with friends that weren't very good for him and kind of giving into all of that. And they moved away. Actually, they moved to San Diego. And he had the exact same experience where he had to just step up. And he stepped up so well. I'm telling you what, that boy is, he's just making us all cry. He's so amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
That's real leadership.
This is the opportunity for youth rhetoric in this positive way. I mean, she's really quite blunt with these kids that I keep feeling like, whoa, are you sure you need to say that? Because you're not going to have any friends anymore.
If you're married to the magic, if you really are convicted to the truth, if that's what you're looking for, that is what's the genuine, the real, that's real, true leadership.
Yeah. It's been
Thank
amazing
you.
To watch.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very much.